November 2004. The movies that John had bought over the summer now fell into the same unfortunate category as the abandoned books they'd replaced. She could no longer follow the thread of the plot or remember the significance of the characters if they weren't in every scene. She could appreciate small moments, but retained only a general sense of the film after the credits rolled. That movie was funny. If John or Anna watched with her, they would many times roar with laughter, or jump with alarm, or cringe with disgust, reacting in an obvious, visceral way to something that happened, and she wouldn't understand why. She would join in, faking it, trying to protect them from how lost she was. Watching movies made her keenly aware of how lost she was. The DVDs Lydia had made came at just the right time. Each story told by John and the kids ran only a few minutes long, so she could absorb each one, and she didn't have to actively hold the information in any particular story to understand or enjoy the others. She watched them over and over. She didn't remember everything they talked about, but this felt completely normal, for each of her children and John didn't remember all of the details either. And when Lydia asked them all to recount the same event, each remembered it somewhat differently, omitting some parts, exaggerating others, emphasizing their own individual perspectives. Even biographies not saturated with disease were vulnerable to holes and distortions. She could only stomach watching the Alice Howland video once. She used to be so eloquent, so comfortable talking in front of any audience. Now, she overused the word thingy and repeated herself an embarrassing number of times. But she felt grateful to have it, her memories, reflections, and advice recorded and pinned down, safe from the molecular mayhem of Alzheimer's disease. Her grandchildren would watch it someday and say, "That's Grandma when she could still talk and remember things." She had just finished watching Alice and John. She remained on the couch with a blanket on her lap after the television screen faded to black and listened. The quiet pleased her. She breathed and thought of nothing for several minutes but the sound of the ticking clock on the fireplace mantel. Then, suddenly, the ticking took on meaning and her eyes popped open. She looked at the hands. 10 minutes until 10 o'clock. Oh my God, what am I still doing here? She threw the blanket onto the floor, crammed her feet into her shoes, ran into the study, and clicked her laptop bag shut. Where's my blue bag? Not on the chair, not on the desk, not in the desk drawers, not in the laptop bag. She jogged up to her bedroom. Not on her bed, not on the night table, not on the dresser, not in the closet, not on the desk. She was standing in the hallway, retracing her whereabouts in her boggled mind, when she saw it hanging on the bathroom doorknob. She unzipped it. Cell phone, BlackBerry, no keys. She always put them in there. Well, that wasn't entirely true. She always meant to put them in there. Sometimes she put them in her desk drawer, the silverware drawer, her underwear drawer, her jewelry box, the mailbox, and any number of pockets. Sometimes she simply left them in the keyhole. She hated to think about how many minutes each day she spent looking for her own misplaced things. She bolted back downstairs to the living room. No keys, but she found her coat on the wing chair. She put it on and shoved her hands in the pockets. Keys. She raced to the front hallway, but then stopped before she could reach the door. It was the strangest thing. There was a large hole in the floor just in front of the door. It spanned the width of the hallway and was about 8 or 9 feet in length, with nothing but the dark basement below it. It was impassable. The front hall floorboards were warped and creaky, and she and John had talked recently about replacing them. Had John hired a contractor? Had someone been here today? She couldn't remember. Whatever the reason, there was no using the front door until the hole was fixed. On her way to the back door, the phone rang. "Hi, Mom. I'll be over around 7 and I'll bring dinner." "Okay," said Alice, a slight rise in her tone. "It's Anna." "I know." Dad's in New York until tomorrow, remember? I'm sleeping over tonight. I can't get out of work before 6:30, though, so wait for me to eat. Maybe you should write this down on the whiteboard on the fridge. She looked over at the whiteboard. Do not go running without me. Provoked, she wanted to scream into the phone that she didn't need a babysitter, and she could manage just fine alone in her own house. She breathed instead. Okay, see you later. She hung up the phone and congratulated herself on still having editorial control over her raw emotions. Someday soon, she wouldn't. She would enjoy seeing Anna, and it would be good not to be alone. She had her coat on and her laptop and baby blue bag slung over her shoulder. She looked out the kitchen window. Windy, damp, gray. Morning, maybe? She didn't feel like going outside, and she didn't feel like sitting in her office. She felt bored, ignored, and alienated in her office. She felt ridiculous there. She didn't belong there anymore. She removed her bags and coat and headed for the study, but a sudden thud and clink made her backtrack to the front hallway. The mail had just been delivered through the slot in the door, and it lay on top of the hole, somehow hovering there. It had to be balancing on an underlying beam or floorboard that she couldn't see. Floating mail. My brain is fried. She retreated into the study and tried to forget about the gravity-defying hole in the front hallway. It was surprisingly difficult.